Part 2. The Group and Herd. Chapter 1. What Constitutes Public Opinion? The character and origins of public opinion, the factors that make up the individual mind and the group mind, must be understood if the profession of public relations counsel is to be intelligently practiced and its functions and possibilities accurately estimated. Society must understand the fundamental character of the work he is doing, if for no other reason than its own welfare. The Public Relations Council works with that vague, little understood, indefinite material called public opinion. Public opinion is a term describing an ill-defined, mercurial, and changeable group of individual judgments. Public opinion is the aggregate result of individual opinions, now uniform, now conflicting, of the men and women who make up society or any group of society. In order to understand public opinion, one must go back to the individual who makes up the group. The mental equipment of the average individual consists of a mass of judgments on most of the subjects which touch his daily physical or mental life. These judgments are the tools of his daily being, and yet they are his judgments, not on a basis of research and logical deduction, but for the most part, dogmatic expressions accepted on the authority of his parents, his teachers, his church, and of his social, his economic, and other leaders. The Public Relations Council must understand the social implications of an individual's thoughts and actions. Is it, for example, purely an accident that a man belongs to one church rather than another, or to any other church at all? Is it an accident that makes Boston women prefer brown eggs and New York women white eggs? What are the factors that work in favor of conversion of a man from one political party to another, or from one type of food to another? Why do certain communities resist a prohibition law? Why do others abide by it? Why is it difficult to start a new party movement or to fight cancer? Why is it difficult to fight for sex education? Why does the free trader denounce protectionism and vice versa? If we had to form our own judgments on every matter, we should all have to find out many things for ourselves which we now take for granted. We should not cook our food or live in houses. In fact, we should revert to primitive living. The Public Relations Council must deal with the fact that persons who have little knowledge of a subject almost invariably form definite and positive judgments upon that subject. If we examine the mental furniture of the average man, says William Trotter, the author of a comprehensive study of the social psychology of the individual, we shall find it is made up of a vast number of judgments of a very precise kind upon subjects of very great variety, complexity, and difficulty. He will have fairly settled upon views upon the origin and nature of the universe, and upon what he will probably call its meaning. He will have conclusions as to what is to happen to him at death and after, as to what is and what should be the basis of conduct. He will know how the country should be governed, and why it is going to the dogs, why this piece of legislation is good and that bad. He will have strong views upon military and naval strategy, the principles of taxation, the use of alcohol and vaccination, the treatment of influenza, the prevention of hydrophobia, upon municipal trading, the teaching of Greek, upon what is permissible in art, satisfactory in literature, and hopeful in science. The bulk of such opinions must necessarily be without rational basis, since many of them are concerned with problems admitted by the expert to still be unsolved, while as to the rest, it is clear that the training and experience of no average man can qualify him to have any opinion upon them at all. The rational method adequately used would have told him that on the great majority of these questions there could be for him but one attitude, that of suspended judgment. End quote. The reader will recall from his own experience an almost infinite number of instances in which the amateur has been fully prepared to deliver expert advice and to give final judgment in matters upon which his ignorance is patent to everyone except himself. In the Middle Ages, society was convinced that there were witches. People were so positive that they burned people whom they suspected of witchcraft. Today, there is an equal number of people who believe just as firmly, one way or the other, about spiritualism and spirits. They do not burn mediums, but people who have made no research of the subject pass strong denunciatory judgments. Others, no better informed, consider mediums divinely inspired. Not so long ago, every intelligent man knew the world was flat. Today, the average man has a belief just as firm and unknowing in the mysterious force which he has called atomic energy. It is axiomatic that men who know little are often intolerant of a point of view that is contrary to their own. The bitterness that has been brought about by arguments on public questions is proverbial. Lovers have been parted by bitter quarrels on theories of pacifism or militarism. And when an argument upon an abstract question engages opponents, they often desert the main line of arguments in order to abuse each other. How often this is true can be seen from the congressional records of controversies in which the personal attack supersedes logic. In a recent fight against the proposed tariff measures, a protagonist of protection published long vindictive statements in which he tried to confound the character and the disinterestedness of his opponents. Logically, his discussion should have been based only upon the sound economic, social, and political value of the bill as presented. 100 leading American bankers, businessmen, professional men, and economists united in public disapproval of this plan. They stated their opinion that the American Valuation Plan, as it was called, would endanger the prosperity of the country, that it would be inimical to our foreign relations, and that it would injure the welfare of every country with whom our commercial and industrial ties were at all close. This group was a broadly representative group of men and women, yet the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee accused all these people of acting upon motives of personal gain and lack of patriotism. Prejudice superseded logic. Intolerance is almost inevitably accompanied by a natural and true inability to comprehend or make allowances for opposite points of view. The skilled scientist who may be receptive to any promising suggestion in his own field may, outside of his own field, be found quite unwilling to make any attempt at understanding a point of view contrary to his own. In politics, for example, his understanding of the problem may be fragmentary. Yet he will enter excitedly into discussions on bonus and ship subsidy, of which he has made no study. We find here with significant uniformity what one psychologist has called logic-proof compartments. The logic-proof compartment has always been with us. Scientists have lost their lives through refusing to see flaws in their theories. Intelligent mothers give food to their babies that they would manifestly forbid other mothers to give to their children. Especially significant is the tendency of races to maintain religious beliefs and customs long after these have lost their meaning. Dietary laws, hygienic laws, even laws based upon geographical conditions that have been changed for more than 1,000 years are still maintained in the logic-proof compartment of dogmatic adherence. There is a story that certain missionaries gave money to heathens at the time of conversion, and that the heathen, having got their money, bathe away their conversion in sacred streams. The characteristic of the human mind to adhere to its beliefs is excellently summarized in the volume of Mr. Trotter to which reference has been made before. Quote, "It is clear," says Mr. Trotter, "at the outset that these beliefs are invariably regarded as rational and defended as such, while the position of one who holds contrary views is held to be obviously unreasonable. The religious man accuses the atheist of being shallow and irrational, and is met by a similar reply. To the conservative, the amazing thing about the liberal is his incapacity to see reason except the only possible solution of public problems. Examination reveals the fact that the differences are not due to the commission of the mere mechanical fallacies of logic, since these are easily avoided, even by the politician. And since there is no reason to believe that one party in such controversies is less logical than the other, the differences is due rather to the fundamental assumptions of the antagonists being hostile, and the assumptions are derived from heard suggestions. To the liberal, certain basal conceptions have acquired the quality of instinctive truth, have become a priori syntheses, because of the accumulated suggestions to which he has been exposed. And a similar explanation applies to the atheist, the Christian, and the conservative. Each, it is important to remember, finds in consequence the rationality of his position flawless, and is quite incapable of detecting in it the fallacies which are obvious to his opponent. to whom that particular series of assumptions have not been rendered acceptable by Heard suggestion. Thus, the Public Relations Council has to consider the a priori judgment of any public he deals with before counseling any step that would modify those things in which the public has established belief. It is seldom effective to call names or to attempt to discredit the beliefs themselves. The Council on Public Relations, after examination of the source of established beliefs, must either discredit the old authorities or create new authorities by making articulate a mass opinion against the old belief or in favor of the new.